Julia Levine is here. She has won a great number of awards for her work, including the 2003 Tampa Review Prize for her second full-length collection, Ask, the 1998 Anhinga Poetry Prize, and bronze medal from Forward Magazine for her first collection, Practicing for Heaven, and she's received multiple pushcart nominations. Her most recent book of poetry, Ditch Tender, was released from University of Tampa Press in 2008, and you've got something even more recent than that, don't you, Julia? No, she doesn't. Okay. And her work has appeared in a great number of anthologies, including The Places That Inhabit Us, the Autumn House Anthology of Contemporary American Poetry. She has a PhD in clinical psychology from UC Berkeley, and she lives right here in Davis. Julia Levine, I understand that this is for the first time that I can say welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
It is, and I'm so thrilled to finally be included in this institution of Davis.
Absolutely. Well, welcome to the program. You have read at the poetry series that I helped to host.
Yes.
In downtown Davis. And you're returning tomorrow night, and you're bringing your friend Ruth Schwartz, who has a new book out.
Yes, that's right. I think it's her fifth book. She's an amazing poet and a longtime friend of mine.
That's great. Well, I want to ask you about Ruth in a few minutes, but first let's hear some more about you. Many people know you as a mom, as a therapist, as a bicyclist here in the city of Davis. And I bet you have some clients who don't even know that you're an established award-winning poet with
yes.
multiple books to your name.
And I don't mind if it stays that way either.
Well, I'm sorry to tell you, but you've just come on a radio show, and we're talking about that in particular. And there are flyers around town and around campus. Have you seen this flyer?
No, but it's a very flattering picture. Did you take it?
No, I didn't take it, but we'll make sure to take some pictures tomorrow night.
Okay, great.
So, but I think people who do know wonder, how is it that you balance your load of clients and the kind of psychological, imaginative responsibilities of an award-winning poet?
You're so funny, Andy. Well, certainly my living I take very seriously as a psychologist. That's not a hobby. That's truly my profession, and I take it really seriously. It always comes first. Maybe only sometimes second to being a mom. The writing is what I fit in whenever I can, but I've been doing it for so long, I can't really imagine a life without it. When I first had kids, I felt really guilty about writing. I felt like if I had to earn a living and I couldn't spend every minute with them, I should never do anything but be with them. But what I found myself doing was a bit like an alcoholic. I would sneak out to my writing place and try to come back in before they woke up so that nobody would know. And I realized at a certain point it was hopeless. I was going to be a writer. Should I keep going?
Yeah, this is good. I like this.
Okay, well, so what I wanted to say was I felt very, very guilty about it until my first book was published. And my second child was 5 years old. She went into the Avid Reader while I was there with her. And I was looking at some books, and I looked up, and her head was peeking up over the counter, and she was asking the person at the desk, "My mommy's a poet named Julia Levine. Do you have her book here?" And they said, "Yes, we do." And they took her over there. And the look on her face was, I thought, okay, I'm probably not going to traumatically injure her by writing once in a while.
Right. And do you take on mom topics in your books? Maybe more so in your earlier books than recently?
That's exactly right. More so in my earlier books because I actually had kids at home.
Right.
Now I've only got one teenager who barely talks to me at home, so I don't have a lot of material to work with.
Right. The isolation from one's own nearly adult children.
Yes, exactly.
Good, good. Julia Levine is my guest, and we're talking about poetry and the challenges of a working poet who also, as we've been talking about, takes her job as a therapist very seriously. How long have you lived in the city of Davis?
Wow, a really long time. I guess about 23 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, a really long time.
That was the year before I moved to Davis.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine Davis without you, Andy.
Oh, thank you. That's nice. When my wife moved here from Chicago, we went and lived in Sacramento for a number of years. And we were back there recently, and we realized that neither one of us was very well known. when we lived in Sacramento, and that Davis is the place for us because, A, we have so many friends here, and, B, a certain amount of notoriety. For instance, my my wife's replacement column for Bob Dunning was just published in today's Davis Enterprise.
Oh, I'll have to go home and read that.
Yeah, that's also a mom story that I'm sure you'll enjoy.
I will. That's a really neat story, Andy.
Well, speaking of which, what is it about poetry that compels you to write it versus, say, essays or short stories about the things that you care about?
Well, I have written essays and short stories, but I think it's two things. It's a quality of attention that I don't feel like I've had the luxury of having since I've had to work and I've been raising kids. I've always thought that when I finally retired, if I was still lucid enough to even write a single sentence, I might actually try to work in another form.
Mm-hmm.
And poetry really lends itself to sort of having a container in your mind around what it is you're trying to do without feeling like you need to have, you know, enormous blocks of time in which to do it. And it's easier to pick back up, kind of like knitting, you know where your stitches are, as opposed to maybe painting a great big huge mural somewhere. So I think the quality of attention, the quantity of time I've had has determined it. But I also have to say there's something about poetic language and silence that I'm drawn to, both in the work I do with kids as a psychologist, but just in everyday living. I love the feeling of dreamlike fluidity of poetic language. I love the way the form allows so many different things to happen, that it always works with silence. That's, you know, the whole idea of the verbal alongside the nonverbal is so powerful and so compelling to me.
Absolutely. Julia Levine is my guest, and we're chatting about poetry and living in the city of Davis. I'm going to ask her some more of these hard-hitting questions when we return. And then we're also going to ask her to read a poem or two on this afternoon's edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour in anticipation of Julia's reading tomorrow evening with Ruth Schwartz at the John Itzulis Gallery, 521 First Street, here in the city of Davis. Welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Julia Levine is my guest. She'll be reading tomorrow evening with Ruth Schwartz at the John Itzulis Gallery. If you want to find out more about Julia, you can visit poetryindavis.com. And Julia, remind me, do you also have your own website?
No, I'm going to remind you that I don't.
Okay.
I'm not, I'm
and
sort
how
of
do
a
you feel
cyber,
about that?
Well, I'm sort of a cyber retard, so I feel rather proud of that. I know that's not politically correct. Okay, let me say it again. I'm cyber challenged.
All right. And but it sounds like you're comfortable that way. In case one of your, for instance, patients Googles you, you're saying that they wouldn't find a collection of your poetry first.
No, that's not actually true. That's the way a lot of people do find out about a poet. They want to find a web page for me. And so then they end up finding all the links on Google to the prizes I've won or places I've read or,
right.
You know, things that are, I guess, newsworthy.
And so probably the Poetry in Davis site that has a little page on you, that's probably one of the things that they find, too.
Yeah, that might be. I don't know.
Okay. So clearly you don't do a lot of, what's that called, Evan, where you Google yourself?
Googling yourself?
Yeah, but it's got a special phrase. Thank you for that circular answer. But anyway, so you don't spend a lot of time looking for yourself online.
No, would you recommend that?
Well, it depends on how you want the trajectory of your poetic career to be received. Obviously, you've been doing well because a lot of your books have won prizes.
Well, Andy, here's the thing you should probably know. If
okay.
it wasn't for Ruth Schwartz, I probably wouldn't have a book because it's never been a goal of mine to be published. I mm-hmm. love writing. I love the experience of writing. I love being surprised by what I write. I love the experience of craft and finding a way to make something beautiful. And I really hadn't a whole lot of ambition as a writer. And I had won some prizes because Ruth had urged me to send stuff out, and I thought, oh, well, this is easy, which is like a laugh now when I think about it. But she decided she was going to send a manuscript of mine out because she was sending out her second book. So when I actually won the Anhinga Prize, I didn't even know what they had. I didn't even know what version she was sending out of my manuscript. So I was probably the only person who, when they called me up, I said, well, what do you have?
So,
far as the trajectory of my career, I'm like remarkably happy. I feel so lucky. It was never part of what I expected, and I feel so, so lucky. You know, I still get that thrill of like looking at a book and seeing my name on it, like, whoa, that's me.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
Well, we've got a caller who wants to contribute to this conversation. Why don't, if you don't mind, put on one of those pairs of headphones, and we'll welcome this person. Welcome, caller, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Are you there, caller? Going once. Going twice. Yep. She or he is gone. This happens sometimes. You know, sometimes it's a wrong number. Sometimes they lose their... they're back. Welcome, caller, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Someone's having fun at our expense, Julia.
Maybe they're shy.
Maybe so. Maybe we should talk about getting yet another intern, Evan, and that would be a call screener. Let's add that to the next production meeting discussion. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. And so I wanted to ask you, Julia, about the direction you were taking the conversation, and that is that usually one doesn't win these big prizes without a series of mentors and official classes. You know, sometimes you have autodidacts who do amazing things in the worlds of poetry. But often there are mentor-mentee relationships that guide people through the difficulties of, as you were saying, sending things out, publishing, prize-winning, etc. And so do you think primarily of Ruth when you think about those sort of guides?
Well, Ruth and I, it feels like we're colleagues more
right.
than mentor-mentee. I had really bad experiences in college with being told that I had no talent and that there was no point in my writing. So I went underground with my writing, and I just read a lot and wrote for myself. I think I was lucky in that way because I really never got into the, you know, wanting so much to be published or seen.
Right.
When I think of mentors or mentees, I mean, I have over time taken like week-long workshops or two-week, won fellowships to like, say, Sewanee or the Napa Valley Writers Workshop and Squaw, and I've learned a lot, but I probably have learned the most by reading and writing and thinking. There was a time I really craved a mentor-mentee relationship, and mm-hmm. I did have what I called a poetry angel when I won the Discovery Award. There was a poet there named Arthur Smith who was one of the judges, and he was really wanting to help me with my career, but I didn't really even know what to ask him except, you know, gee, you really like me? Thanks.
Right.
I didn't even know what the question should be. So, but I don't know, as I've gotten older, I love the conversation I have with Ruth. It feels like we talk to each other's unconscious, and,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very, very special connection. I have it with a couple other people in the world. But I have to say, the few times I've taught poetry, I've learned just as much. So I'm not probably a very good person for this question.
No,
actually,
this is really interesting. I think people are fascinated by what you're saying, because what you're asking too is what is the place of this community in the world of the imagination, and that is that it needn't be a dependent relationship. That if you have certain insights and abilities and natural born talent, then through the reading and writing process and reflecting process, you can discover a great deal.
Okay, yeah. Sounds really good. That's exactly what I meant, Andy.
Well put. What about your teaching? You've taught at the Davis Arts Center?
Yes, and I did three summers in a row I taught at the Antioch Writers Workshop in Ohio.
Mm-hmm. That was in Yellow Springs, Ohio?
Yeah, and
I spent time there.
You have?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really cool town.
My dad and my wife both went to Antioch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that town. You know, I haven't taught a lot, but especially the classes at the Davis Art Center, I'm not just saying this, but the quality of the writing in the classes I taught was absolutely astonishing. And these were not necessarily, there were a few people in there that had MFAs from Davis, but they were also people like me who were just really loved poetry. And I have to say they were, I've taught at a few other places I can't think off the top of my head right now, but they were actually it was actually my favorite experiences teaching there. Mm-hmm. I loved the students. They were remarkable.
That's terrific. Well, Julia, we need to take a break to hear a public service announcement, and then when we come back, we're actually going to have you read something poetic that
Great.
You've written.
Great. I was hoping you'd ask for that.
Absolutely. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Julia Levine is my guest, and she'll be reading tomorrow evening with Ruth Schwartz at the John Atsoulis Gallery. Every first and third Thursday, you can find a poetry reading at the John Atsoulis Gallery. It'll be Julia and Ruth tomorrow. In 2 weeks, we'll be joined by Tracy Gordeen and Emily Hughes. And then, in November, in the first Thursday of November, it'll be Sandra Gilbert who will be reading. We've been chasing after her for about 5 years for this reading series. And then, in the third Thursday of November, we have Joe Winderoth. A busy time for poetry. Check it all out at poetryanddavis.com. Julia, I think people at home would love to hear a poem.
Okay.
Which one have you prepared? And I should probably have cleared this with you off mic, but there are certain rules about things that you can say on the radio.
Uh-oh, I was just going to ask that.
And I'm wondering if there are any of the seven words that we need to review to see if any editing is called for.
Well, then I better not read this one, because can I use this word right here?
Yeah, you can say that.
Okay.
Okay.
And the other ones are like cuss words?
Right, cuss words.
Yeah, I don't
you
have
can't
any
say.
Cuss words.
Okay.
I just have names for, like, body parts.
Yeah, I think we can get away with that.
Okay.
But if necessary, we're going to hear a poem in a moment with some body parts in it. If you're listening to this with small children and you'd rather they not hear that, then you might turn down the radio for about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Julia Levine, what's the name of this poem?
So this is from a series of poems I'm writing called, mm-hmm. They're what I call my version poems. And in my version poems, I'm doing something new. I'm trying to actually be somewhat humorous while I'm also trying to do something interesting with the language. But I'm thinking about if I could be, say, do anything I want and there were no limits, you know, what would I do? So in this version, I'm talking about having a penis.
Mm-hmm.
So the name of this poem is In One of 10,000 Versions.
Okay, great.
Okay. In one of 10,000 versions, I have a penis, and I use it wisely, holding it out for the swallows who need to pause between empires they are building under the bridge, or as a brief splint for wild roses, their buds overheavy with spring. Other times I use my penis like the clumsy brush of a kindergartner, painting the trees under an extraordinary confusion of stars. In summer, my penis doubles as ballast and keel for my kayak bumping down the American River, egrets lifting off with prehistoric groans. And speaking of history, I don't insult my penis by confusing it with handguns or armored tanks leveling foreign slums. Their poverty so much more offensive and odorous than our own. I don't holster or pack heat, don't whip mongrels with barbed wire. No, my penis is not larva feeding on victory, swelling into pat grenades, hoarse from shouting at the opposing halfback. My penis is simply a voice box for desire, not exactly deaf, but limited in its knowledge of sign language. It can gesture more, I want more. It can point like the rabbi's long-handled yod at women made shapely with time, their gaze shattered by adolescence, then pieced back together with burden, because my penis knows loveliness must be anointed, must be touched as if it were parchment inscribed with the delicate shadow of God. Believe me, There is a science to loving the penis, and I have studied its vulnerability before the presence of mystery, quivering like a dowsing stick before the river of my wanting, and leaping to announce that I need to be held in the igneous face of beauty, at least that part of me still willing to catch fire to burn.
That was a poem by Julie Levine. I really enjoyed that. It's interesting how with some audiences, with some readers, you might be able to get away with reading that poem in your attractive female voice in the way that a man, if you were to write that poem, it would seem strange or odd or off-putting. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't understand the question. Do I think I'm strange and off-putting?
No, I'm saying that it's part of the delight of the poem comes from hearing a woman read it.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. I don't know. I mean, to me, what I'm really trying to do is talk about the ways in which the penis, which I think is really a metaphor for a lot of male macho warfare aggression, really is a very vulnerable and sweet little organ that has a very special vulnerable job to do. And I think I've been very touched, actually, by the vulnerability of men in my later years. Maybe because I work with boys, I don't know. I just find men to be very sweet and tender and vulnerable underneath all that stuff. So that's what I'm writing about. I don't know. You're kind of making it sound like maybe there's something erotic in the poem, and that isn't necessarily where I was going, but that's not bad either.
Well, and it just, as you're exploring the different imagery, I'll just state it positively, that hearing you read it gives it a kind of a double voicedness, which is delightful when one hears the poem.
Well, good.
I hope you read it tomorrow night.
I was going to, yes.
Okay,
absolutely.
Good.
It's a crowd pleaser, I think.
The tomorrow night that we're talking about is an event at the John Atsulis Gallery where my guest, Julie Levine, is going to be joined by Ruth Schwartz. And the two of them are going to be reading new poems and some old poems at 521 First Street. That's at 8 o'clock tomorrow. There will be an open mic at 9 o'clock and then the after party at 10 over at DeVere's Irish Pub for those who can stay up that late. Julia, let's hear another poem.
Okay, this is another version poem, and this poem is called In Another Version, I Have a Child with God. In another version, I have a child with God, a girl this time. He coos and chortles with a joy that shouldn't surprise me, having seen Daffodil Hill and quince orchards blossoming in spring. Still, it's sweet how the big guy kneels beside her crib and then pops up like a newly exploded solar system, crowing, "Peekaboo, now you see me, now you don't," which is how I feel about the night feedings he promised to share. In fact, with few exceptions, he's not much different from my first husband, his critically important errands just when the baby's diapers need changing, or how I ask him for tomatoes and a pint of half and half, and he comes back with a bushel of horned melon and three goats rescued from a cliff in Crete. "Honey," I say, "you are hopeless." And he smiles like a meteor shower, which sets the baby laughing at all the electromagnetic neutrinos dazzling the walls, which only amplifies his pleasure until sometimes I have to insist he stop before we all spontaneously combust, which he says is impossible. "Darling, be rational." This is where we get into our arguments about reason and mystery. What with his claims to have created a universe in a week when he can't even fold the laundry before bed? But despite all the critiques on his cruelty and arrogance or the outright lies about his homophobia and pro-life agendas, you have no idea how often he cries at night when he thinks I'm sleeping, poring over his species, weeping for the laughing owl, Cuban holly, or Xerxes, the last blue butterfly. Just reading the Times, he can take a millennia over the lists of Iraqi dead, touching each name as if fingering an original spark blundered into darkness. On Sundays, he stares out the window at our unmowed lawn, devising good dreams for the terminally ill. Other times, he watches the baby sleep, her brutally perfect lips parted in a plump collision. He shakes his head, whispering, "Honey, what was I thinking? How could I have gotten it so right and wrong at the same time?" This is when I gather his immensity into my arms, crooning, "Shh, what about the pomegranates with their cathedrals of scarlet? What about the taste of it and the fire of the actual flaring in a single afternoon among the aspens? What about a body meaning everything it cannot say, like the wild uncoated sea where we vacationed last June, all morning, wave by wave, quietly unloading its portage of last night's winds?"
That was terrific. Tell us again the title of that poem.
In another version, "I Have a Child with God."
Julia Levine is the poet. She's a Davis resident and therapist and mom. And tomorrow she'll be performing with Ruth Schwartz at the John Nitzulis Gallery at 8 o'clock as part of the Poetry Night reading series. Julia Levine is our keynote featured guest for the entire hour of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour this afternoon. We'll be back with more of her and some public service announcements in just a moment. We've just been chatting off mic about the poetry of Julia Levine, who's the author of a number of books that we were talking about earlier. She's a poet and therapist who earned her PhD in clinical psychology from UC Berkeley. And her poetry has won national and international awards, including a Discovery Award, the Nation Award, the Pablo Neruda Prize in Poetry, and the Anhinga Poetry Prize. She received a bronze medal from Forward Magazine for her first collection, Practicing for Heaven, and the University of Tampa Poetry Prize for her second book, Ask. She's been widely published in literary journals, including Plowshares, Prairie Schooner, Poetry East, and the Southern Poetry Review. Her latest book, Ditch Tender, was released from University of Tampa Press. She has work appearing in several new anthologies, including The Places That Inhabit Us and the Autumn House Anthology of Contemporary American Poetry. She's here in the studio, and we're talking about an event that happens tomorrow evening. Julia Levine will be reading with Ruth Schwartz. And make sure to stick around, because later on, Evan White has a public service announcement to share. And what's the topic, Evan?
Hepatitis.
So stick around for that. So, and here's Julia laughing at hepatitis. I can imagine the conversations we have off mic. So, it must be fun to read with your friend Ruth Schwartz. Have you two co-performed together?
Many times. In fact, one of the reasons I'm doing this reading is I'm probably Ruth Schwartz's biggest promoter. When we were at AWP together, I was practically tackling people to knock them down and have them buy her books because they're extraordinary. Ruth is always my first reader. When I have a new manuscript ready, which I almost do, I almost have my fourth manuscript ready, Ruth is the first person who sees it. I trust her entirely. In fact, I used to incorporate every change, and she used to say, "Julia, I don't want that kind of power."
Right.
And I'm only now just beginning to think, I don't agree with that. And then I'm like, whoa, I didn't agree with Ruth.
Yes.
Wow, I must be growing up.
Excellent. Well, I wonder what people are thinking who have not yet published their fourth book and who are wondering how close they are to growing up. I don't know. If that's a measure, then many of us have some growing to do.
No, that
but I guess that keeps you in business, all the growing that the people of Davis have to do.
Well, I mostly work with children who are legitimately growing.
Okay. That's good. So we've got legitimate and illegitimate growth.
No, Andy.
Excellent. I like it. Hey, that reminds me, the debate happens this evening between President Obama and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. You're looking at me with some surprise. It starts in about 15 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. We're taping it at my house. I'm going to bike home very quickly, and then we're going to start it up at about 20 minutes after.
Well, I better hurry up and talk then, fast.
Well, no, we've got to fill out the whole hour, no matter how quickly you speak.
So I'm trapped here. The door is locked, right?
Exactly.
I wondered why there was that chain around my leg.
Right. Well, when Mitchell Van Landingham and the cast of 8, which I should just say we should give them their dues, Friday, October 5th at 8 p.m. at the University Club, it's a one-night-only affair. And it's the account of the federal district court trial in Perry versus Schwarzenegger, the case filed by AFER to overturn Proposition 8. We have a caller, perhaps, on this very topic. Let's see if this works out. Caller, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Hello, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, who's this?
This is Ezra, and I was just calling because you had mentioned the debate.
Yes.
And Democracy Now! Is going to be having coverage of the debate with interjections from third-party candidates. So,
oh, that's great. Because
go on.
I was going to say we can't actually hear third-party candidates in the official debate, but
yeah.
You're saying that Democracy Now! Is going to do its best to address that and at least give us access to alternative opinions and views.
Yeah. Basically, what they're going to be doing is pausing the debate and then giving, I believe, two of the third-party candidates equal time with the same format.
And a chance to answer some of those same questions.
Yes.
What a great idea. So will that be the Green Party candidate as well as a Libertarian candidate?
I believe so. Definitely the Green Party candidate, and then I think the Libertarian candidate.
And are you going to be listening to that online?
Yes.
Excellent. Well, we know that Democracy Now! Is a great place, or that KDBS is a great place also to encounter Democracy Now! Free Speech Radio News is another news broadcast that also welcomes a great variety of opinions. Ezra, I appreciate you bringing this to our attention.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Julia Levine is my guest. And, Julia, I forget if I had left a question on the table, but why don't we hear another poem?
Okay. I prefer that after the questions you've asked me.
Excellent.
Okay. So what I want to say about this poem is that it's funny how when you sit down to write, you think you're going to write about, maybe in my case, I love to write about the natural world. I love beauty. I'm really moved in particular by water. And so I was having one of my usual, I'm going to sit down and write a beautiful poem. And instead I wrote about a guy at the gas station. So the title of this poem refers to the fact that it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So the poem is called Instead of Orchids or an Elegy of Swans. Instead of orchids or an elegy of swans gliding across a spring-fed pond, there was Danny Romeo. Danny by day, the women like to call me Romeo at night, in a pressed white shirt and tie, offering to wash my windshield at the Arco. And then his offhand suggestion to fix two divots I couldn't see but felt, his hand leading my thumb over the dimpled chips, my insurance company already dialed up on a cell phone, and his guy in a T-shirt and jeans strolling over from nowhere to plug the holes Danny said would explode the first cold morning, shattering your entire glass. Clearly a scam, I should have turned away. But when his guy injected epoxy and dried it with a blue flame, it was disarming how Danny delivered what was promised. We shook hands, smiled, then all the way across the delta, the late summer sun blindingly gold and generous, cattle egrets unfolding over the slate-gray bay, traffic snaking at a crawl. It seemed August was not the month to go round the heart's four rooms without opening the blinds, letting the wind in. Danny Romeo, no doubt, closing a few more deals before ending with a girl in his bed, his hands touching her carefully as if she was the world itself. One made as much of sweetness as of damage, or at least perched at the very beginning of disaster, with time enough for just the right repair.
That was Julia Levine, Davis award-winning poet. We'll be reading tomorrow night at the John Itzulis Gallery. We're going to hear just a bit of jazz, and then Evan White with some wise words on hepatitis. Here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Julia Levine is here, and she has a poem to share. Which poem are you going to close the show with, Julia?
So I would like to close this show the way I close all my readings, with a love poem to my husband, who I think is out there listening, or I hope he is. I think I'm not going to introduce this poem too much, but I just want to say that sometimes in the middle of a pretty nasty argument, you can get lucky. Okay, so this is called For Beauty. For beauty, the sky came towards us across the hills, the black clouds buckling hard against the cliffs. Already we were arguing, the accusations perfectly alive in air, you grabbing me too hard along my forearms, until, twisting free, we both turned and saw them there, a herd of albino deer on the ridge behind us, grazing, lips pressed to darkness, silent. I go back to the rapture of it, standing in the chickweed, the miner's lettuce, the wild stalk, your hands drawing my face close. I go back to how near we were to the whole of it, the sky kneeling down a moment to lift the meanness of our half-gone lives into light's consoling river, the easy mark of those snow-white deer barely moving through the grass, that translucence made flesh and rising against the glowering mustard, the dimming hills.
Excellent. And the title again of that poem?
For Beauty.
Julia Levine has been my guest this hour. Julia, it's been a pleasure to have you on the radio show.
It's been a pleasure for me too, Andy.
I know that how satisfying it is to be finishing up your fourth manuscript. Good luck with that. And also to be able to read before some friends tomorrow. Have you told your friends that you're reading tomorrow?
You know, I tried telling my friends, but it seems like none of them got my email. So I don't know what's wrong with me. It's, again, my cyber challenge.
Most people who are cyber challenged nevertheless can figure out email. So you might give it another try or hire a youngster.
I've actually done it twice now.
So, well, maybe some of them are listening and they'll tell
their
mutual friends.
I hope so.
Okay, great. Evan, thanks for coming on the show again and not only being the producer of the show, but helping out with the public service announcements.
Absolutely.
Are you going to be at Poetry Night tomorrow?
I will be. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. And Julia Levine will have some books for sale at the John Atsulis Gallery Bookstore. That's at 521 First Street. The event starts at 8 o'clock, the open mic at 9, the after party at 10. If you want to find out more information about any of this, you can visit poetryindavis.com.